This is the Nature of Cities podcast. This is the Nature of Cities, a podcast about cities as ecosystems of people, nature, and infrastructure. We believe that better cities are built for and by people with livability, resilience, sustainability, and justice as the principal drivers of design.
The pixelated video opens on a short, mustachioed man in a pork pie hat, a wide and loose-fitting paisley necktie, and a two-tone suit that looks just one size too big for his skinny frame. He smiles and mugs for the camera as he breaks out in a whirling dervish of a dance around a clutch of bemused onlookers. The setting is Washington Square Park in the Greenwich Village neighborhood of New York City. Andy Hernandez, a member of the tropical new wave band Kid Creole and the Coconuts, is on a mission to create a music video for a medley of the band's latest songs. He wants the video to capture the unrehearsed energy of a New York City park on a Sunday afternoon. The year is 1981, and open spaces across the city are suffering from crumbling infrastructure and a cresting wave of violent crime that leaves many parks abandoned and unused for years to come. But you wouldn't know it from watching Hernandez, who goes by the stage name Koti Mundi, as he bounces and weaves through the throngs of happy park patrons on that sunny afternoon in Washington Square.
Because I went to NYU, New York University, and I remember on a Sunday how much activity there was always at the park, and diversified types of people, young, old, all types of ethnicities, children, the whole thing. I said, there's really a great energy in Washington Square Park, so why don't we just go there?
Though movies and newspaper clippings from the late 1970s and the early 1980s could lead us to believe that New York City parks were all desolate and dangerous, Hernandez's joyful video shows that at least one park remained vital and vibrant for throngs of people looking for a place to hang out and play.
The Washington Square Park footage was just so entertaining, so naturally organic, with all the types of people that I have always grown up with, the homies, the college students, older people. It was just such a rainbow mix, and I always thought my music was rainbow-phonic.
Rainbow-phonic. With that one word, Hernandez unknowingly aligns his video with the work of another Washington Square Park enthusiast whose 100th birthday we celebrate this year. Her name is Jane Jacobs, and her signature book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, is a Bible of sorts for urban planners, landscape architects, and city makers of all sorts. First published in 1961, exactly 20 years before Andy Hernandez boogied through the throngs in Washington Square, the book is a critique of the top-down, one-size-fits-all, mega-project-driven approach to planning that dominated New York and most other cities at the time.
The thing that I love about Jane's work is that it never really gets old. It's quite remarkable to me. And I'm a person who has very dog-eared copies of all of her books, and I am pretty regularly dipping back into them.
That's Mary Rowe, an urbanist and a senior fellow with the organization Project for Public Spaces. She got to know Jane Jacobs in the last decade of Jane's life. In honor of Jacob's birthday, we asked Mary to reflect on Chapter 5 in Death and Life of Great American Cities, a chapter that finds Jacobs picking apart the idea that building more parks automatically makes for better neighborhoods.
It's striking to me how critical a chapter it is, and I mean critical as in negative, about artificial planning of parks. She's not anti-park, but what she's saying is that a park plopped down out of context that has no relationship with its environment around it is a failed park. She, I suspect, would be as critical of a park by itself, a monoculture, as she would be of an office park or of a commercial district that only had one certain kind of user or employer, or a residential neighborhood that doesn't have any variety either. These are all her indictment of monocultures.
Diversity was at the heart of Jacob's perspective on cities. She believed that the best public spaces, not just parks, but also sidewalks and even city streets, created a kaleidoscope of different experiences for city dwellers. A rainbow phonic experience like the one Andy Hernandez sought for his music video. For Jacobs, parks weren't meant to be oases or retreats from urban life, but just one more patch in the complex and sometimes chaotic fabric of a city of nearly 8 million people.
First of all, you have to really pay attention to Jane's critique of pastoralization. You know, she was a very shrewd observer of a kind of throwback manifesting in various ways in our culture that idealizes pastoral, rural landscape over the teeming energy of the city. And that somehow we're all going to hearken back to when we had these kind of bucolic vistas, and that somehow life, a more elevated life, includes that kind of environment. And so she's quite critical of landscape architects who are preoccupied, for instance, with those kinds of aesthetic qualities.
Though Jacobs' views on planning and design continue to be influential, some say she went too far in her indictment of parks that aren't located in the midst of a bustling urban landscape.
I strongly disagree with her on the idea that only parks and busy places will be successful, because she has no appreciation for the role of the edge parks, for the natural parks, for the big natural areas that don't have to be full of people to be successful. And in fact, you need those rural getaways within the city that are not completely packed with people.
That's Adrian Benepi, the commissioner of New York City Parks for nearly 12 years under former mayor Michael Bloomberg.
The successful park system has a broad cross-section. You've got your formal squares, you've got your big regional parks, you've got your natural areas, you've got high-intensity athletic uses, and you wouldn't necessarily have all those things at once, and you could never have all those things in one park, unless it's a particularly big park.
In the closing paragraphs of her chapter on neighborhood parks, Jacobs makes a case for designing open spaces that invite a messy layering of different uses, places to repair bikes and build forts and dig in the ground and maybe even roast a pig in an open pit, activities that fly in the face of formal landscape architecture, but help to create that diversity of uses that can make a place more essential to daily life for more people.
And you do now have places where you can roast a pig in community gardens. And, of course, those didn't exist in the Jane Jacobs way. I think community gardens where you dig in the soil, you roast a pig, you have chickens, you have bees, kids can build things. The community gardens, I think, are the essence of what Jane Jacobs is suggesting here. It's a little bit more do-your-own-thing kind of thing that you have in community gardens.
According to Benepi, Jacobs' views were limited by historical circumstances. What was true of urban parks more than 50 years ago, he argues, may not be true today.
Again, Jane Jacobs could not possibly have anticipated the role of private money in public parks, whether it's the privately owned public spaces. The corporate plazas were just starting in 1961 with the rezoning of the city. And I don't think she could have anticipated the Central Park Conservancy or, you know, Washington Square Park Alliance, or the fact that now $150 million a year is coming from private sources into public parks. And I think she's absolutely right. She was seeing firsthand the pernicious effects of disinvestment in the public park system. You know, it was already well on its way to decline. What she was witnessing in her cynical view of parks and abandoned parks and seeing nobody in East River Park, and now the East River Park is packed, was, you know, the depopulation of New York, the abandonment of its park system, its public realm, the abandonment of its public transportation system. Cities were rapidly going downhill and people were fleeing cities. It hadn't reached its low point yet, but it was heading there. And she was seeing that. So she was seeing parks nobody wanted to go to because they weren't maintained and they're unsafe and dark and dangerous.
But even in those dark times, parks continued to be a destination for New Yorkers like Andy Hernandez, who grew up just a few miles north of Washington Square Park in El Barrio, or the neighborhood of Spanish Harlem.
Well, to me, growing up even as a child to my adult years, I always look at the park as a source of information. I never felt danger. Sometimes, to me, was a haven.
This is actually from a lecture that she gave in 2004 the Mumford Lecture. Here's the quote. In its need for variety and acceptance of randomness, a flourishing natural ecosystem is more like a city than like a plantation. Perhaps it will be the city that reawakens our understanding and appreciation of nature in all its teeming, unpredictable complexity.
I will go to the park either to do sports or to socialize or to get away from people. Now, if you got into 11 at night and 12 midnight and those early hours of morning, even to always there's a situation where it could be day, just can get in trouble. But for the most part, the parks to me were a source of great energy, just education, entertainment, a hang, and it was a cheap hang.
I think New York still needs more parks, and particularly as Mayor de Blasio pursues a very important program to create more affordable housing at a vast scale and upzoning neighbors to do so, I'm not sure they have adequately planned for creating additional new park space to accommodate those newly densified neighborhoods.
For Jane Jacobs, a successful neighborhood park should be every bit as exciting and inviting as an impromptu block party. And that's just what you see in Washington Square Park as you watch that old video of Andy Hernandez romping around and dancing with everyone he meets.
In the end, it was a fiesta.
This is Philip Silva on The Nature of Cities. You've been listening to This is the Nature of Cities podcast, produced by The Nature of Cities. Copyright 2016, The Nature of Cities, all rights reserved. For more information about this or other Nature of Cities productions or publications, see thenatureofcities.com.